It's Friday, the 3rd of June, 2016. Happy birthday to Al Horford and Otto Porter. Basketball Monster Show brought to you by Fantrax and PZ Ride. My name is Josh Lloyd, and if you want to be like PZ Ride or PZ Ride, depending on where you live in the world, and sponsor the podcast, all you need to do is leave a review on iTunes and you can become the sponsor for an episode. Of course, we welcomed on a new sponsor to the show yesterday, and that is Fantrax. And thank you for all the support that Fantrax has given the show so far. And yeah, I'll talk about Fantrax in a second, but for now, my name is Josh Lloyd, and if you are watching this show live on YouTube, which you can do with each of the episodes that I put out, and you want to interact with the show, you can tweet at me at redrock_Beeble. This podcast is going to be the Dallas Mavericks season in review, so
let's get to it.
But before we get to it, just a couple of quick housekeeping notes. The Red Rock 30-team Dynasty League applications have started coming in, and thank you for everyone who has started sending in those in. And I said yesterday to apply for it, I want you to leave a comment on the Facebook page. And I realize some people don't have Facebook, which is probably a silly assumption of me to assume that every listener to this podcast has Facebook. If you are interested in the 30-team Red Rock Dynasty League, which I outlined the details on the Houston Rockets season interview show, which you can go and listen to that in the first 15 minutes of the show. If you're interested in that league, send me an email, redrockfantasybasketball@gmail.com, a very straightforward email address, and send me an email saying why you want in. Why do you think you deserve one of the 29 other spots in this? Well, there's not 29 left at the moment. There's a couple of people who have already who already reserved their spots in the league. But send me an email why you think that you would be a worthy owner in a league this deep. So head across to your email client and send me an email to redrockfantasybasketball@gmail.com, and that league will be hosted on Fantrax. And as I mentioned on yesterday's show, Fantrax is it's a great place to host your league. And as you know, I'm hosting my leagues on there this season. They do, and it's not just basketball, they do a total of 9 sports over on Fantrax. Obviously basketball, but they do baseball, college basketball, college football, football, hockey, soccer, golf, NASCAR. That's 9 sports. 9 sports leagues. That's a tremendous amount of stuff you can all put on the same, in the same site and load all your stuff up there. Not only do they have, you know, commissioner or premium options for leagues, but they also offer the best casual game league. They do it better than anyone else with the most options, the most customization abilities. As I touched on yesterday, you can do stuff like be able to keep all your keeper information in there without keeping separate spreadsheets. They can maintain how long players have been on your team. You can have contracts, years length, which automatically roll over, salary amounts, minor league stash squads, European prospects, which a lot of the time they aren't in the databases at Yahoo and at ESPN, so you can't even keep them on your team if you wanted to in some of them. I know Dario Saric hasn't even been available in ESPN for the last couple of leagues, so you couldn't even draft him. If you're on Fantrax, that's not a problem. You can draft these guys that get stashed over in Europe, which we might see a couple of guys like that this year, like, say, Furkan Korkmaz. They might get drafted and stashed. If you're playing on ESPN Yahoo, you can't even pick those guys and leave them on your bench. You have to make some sort of, oh, let's keep it on the spreadsheet. I'll just leave one roster spot free, all that sort of stuff, because they're not as good as Fantrax. You need to head across to Fantrax. The site looks very very sweet at the moment. They've updated the whole look of everything. And even if you're not paying for that the premium fee, which is definitely worth it if you're investing in a premium league, a very high-end detailed league, it is a tremendous feature to have. You include it as part of the buy-in to your league, and the amount of functions and features, once you go and have a look at the FAQs and then look at the options, you will be blown away, and you'll be sitting there for hours and going, how can I make my league better? But they do just the casual, straight-up free leagues better than anyone as well. More customization, more options. Head to fantrax.com and check all that out. We are doing the Dallas Mavericks today, and we are going through how their season went in 2015-16. And it just feels like, apart from their championship year, this is just the Dallas Mavericks. They finished 42-40, and around that 7-8 seed, maybe they're going to make the playoffs, maybe they won't. And that's just what it feels like that they've been for the last 4 or 5 seasons, and you feel like they're just going to be in that spot for perpetuity. They'll just be that team who hovers around that 6-10 area, 6-9 area, because where's the path for them to get forward? They don't have a first-round draft choice this year. They have just one pick, and that's pick 46, because that first-round draft choice was sent to the Boston Celtics as part of that that failed Rajon Rondo deal. But when you look at their team, every year they feel like they're like this. They just clear house. You know, six guys leave, six guys come in, and they keep building and building around Dirk. Now, I imagine when Dirk retires, then the Mavericks might say, let's bottom out and try and rebuild, but it doesn't appear that's something that Cuban has any interest in at this point. They just keep restashing and restacking the deck to try and get themselves a sixth seed. Look, it eventually did work. They won that championship in 2011, and they just kept themselves being relevant, kept themselves being good, and got on a hot streak and ran through the Western Conference in somewhat of a surprise. But at the moment, it's hard to see much in terms of glimmers of hope, because there's nothing on this team outside for a couple of players who we're going to talk about who have any potential really to grow. We look at the players who are unrestricted free agents. It's Zaza Pachulia, 32-year-old Zaza, who came across in a steal of a trade from the Bucks. We have 31-year-old Ray Felton, who played completely unexpectedly, given how much Rick Carlisle hated using him the season before. We have David Lee, who's 33 years old, who came across after being waived by the Celtics mid-season, and you would have heard me speak in less than glowing terms about the way David Lee played during the season. He's an unrestricted free agent. We've got Charlie Villanueva is an unrestricted free agent as well. And then we've got a trio of guys with player options. There's Chandler Parsons, who has a player option for $16 million. We assume he is going to decline that. Dirk Nowitzki has a player option for $8.6 million. He has declined that player option, so he will become an unrestricted free agent. He will also re-sign with Dallas. It's more just for flexibility and longer-term structuring. And Darren Williams is also an unrestricted free agent. He signed that $5 million or $10 million two-year deal, with that second year being a player option in Dallas. Had a pretty good first year and will be looking to sign a longer-term deal, whether that's in Dallas or somewhere else, we don't know at this point. There's also Dwight Powell, who's a restricted free agent, and I'm a pretty big Dwight Powell fan, and they've got JaVale McGee on a non-guaranteed deal, same as Salah Mejri. And if you're keeping one of those two, it's probably Mejri, but Mejri is 29 years old. McGee is 28 years old. So Mejri came on as a rookie. Yeah, look at these big performances from Mejri. He's 29 years old. He's not a future piece on this team. There is one player on this team. One. Let's phrase it again. There are two players on this team, two players total, who are younger than 27. Dwight Powell and Justin Anderson. One on the current roster. In terms of guys that are actually under 30, there's those two. There was Evans, there was McGee, there was Mejri, there was Parsons, and there was Wes Matthews. Not many players under 30, and they're all in the upper stages of the late 20s. Not a huge amount of young talent, and there's going to be no infusion of young talent this season coming from the draft, unless you think pick 46 is going to really shake the foundations of which the Mavericks are built, or if they're going to invest in younger talent, which they could in terms of overpaying a younger free agent to come in. But you just feel they're going to be in that same spot next year, and battling for the 8th seed, battling for the 7th seed, with Dirk there, maybe Parsons, maybe not, Wes Matthews, just guys who sort of have somewhat of a resurrection under Rick Carlisle, because that's just how good Rick Carlisle is. Let's get onto the players specifically and start talking about the season that these guys had. The first one we go to is obviously Dirk Nowitzki. Now, I was not expecting Dirk to have the sort of season that he did. He looked beaten up and broken in EuroCup. In the Euro Championships. He looked putrid, and I thought, Dirk, maybe this is it. Maybe he is cooked. And it turns out I was very, very wrong. He was the 31st ranked player in 9 cat leagues, 52nd in 8 cat leagues. Only a slight drop-off, actually not even a slight drop-off, an improvement on what he did the season before. And that's tremendous given his age. He also led the team in on-off numbers. He posted a 7.9. Plus minus when he was on the court versus when he was off, and that led the team. So that's obviously pretty impressive for a guy of his age. He played 80 games at 32 minutes apiece, and one of the other reasons I was down on Dirk in the preseason is they came out in the preseason and said, we're going to try and limit Dirk to around 28 minutes a night. Well, ended up playing 32 and a huge amount of minutes down the stretch as they pushed to secure themselves into the playoffs. He averaged 18.4 points, 1.63, 6.4 rebounds, almost 2 assists, 0.7 steals, 0.7 blocks, and 45 from the field and 90 from the line, including 37% from 3. We know what Dirk is, but he was so good this season. He played that extra 2 minutes a game, scored more points, hit more threes, grabbed more rebounds, had more steals, had more blocks, and shot better from the free throw line, and only a 1% drop-off from 3 and a 1% drop-off from the field. I don't think you can ask for much more than that. Now, are you investing in Dirk as a top 50 player in a dynasty league? Absolutely not. But you can get him outside the top 100 in a dynasty league if you're looking to really become a win now team. And you know, you should feel pretty confident you're going to get a top 70 season out of Dirk. Maybe he regresses. He is old. Remember, he's been in this league for a very long time. He is 37 years old. At some point, something is going to fall off. And something, if the Mavericks start off the season horribly, is there any chance he plays 32 minutes a night? That is a concern. But you won't need to take him in the top 50. And that's even in redraft leagues. I would highly recommend not doing that. But you'll be able to get him in the 70s, the 80s, the 90s perhaps. And that should be able to return you decent value. But the risk associated with Dirk, because of that situation, if the Mavericks are terrible, then he won't push those extra 2-3 minutes a game. And then his numbers might come back and his shot might fall off. And it probably won't. Considering he's 37 years old, it's unlikely his shot falls. But what if he becomes injury prone? What if something happens? What if his body just can't deal with it anymore and he plays 60 games? That is the concern with Dirk. But taking a risk on him late, it could pay off pretty handsomely for you. In terms of his advanced numbers, we know how much of a key part of this team he is. He was the clear leader on this team in win shares. Actually, not that much clear, considering the guy that came second, which I'll talk about yesterday. I won't talk about it yesterday. I'll talk about it later. I don't know where that yesterday came from. I apologize for my lack of word using. His win shares per 48 were pretty good. As per usual, he was a negative defensively in box score plus minus and didn't look great in terms of his box score plus minus numbers, finishing fifth on the team, but we all know how good Dirk is and what a key contributor he can be for this, or he has been for this team over the entire course of his career. Next, we'll look at Darren Williams, who was a very, very easy target to be ridiculed when he was in Brooklyn. And I thought it was unfair a lot of the time. You would have heard me, and I'll say this straight away, not a fan of Darren Williams. Don't like the way he carries himself. Don't like his attitude. I don't like his personality. I don't like his tattoos. I don't like his hair. Although his hair this season, there was none of it, so that's a win. He just seems like a very irritating person from everything we've seen from him and heard about him over the course of his career. But as I always stress, it doesn't matter. I drafted Darren Williams in so many leagues because I could get him super late, like outside the top 100 in most cases. And he returned a season that was worthy of me picking him there. He finished 100th in 9-cat leagues, but I think for point guards, it's even more important to look at the 8-cat rankings. He finished 80th there and was a guy that looked more engaged than what he did in Brooklyn. I think that's fair to say. Now, he wasn't spectacularly better, but he was still pretty good. And look, his season in Brooklyn wasn't horrible. People will make you think that he was Tony Roten when he played in Brooklyn. His last year in Brooklyn, he averaged 13, 3.5, 6.5 with 1.3 threes and 0.9 steals. Yes, he shot just 39%, but those other numbers were still okay. And he was all right this year, 13.7 points, 1.5 threes, almost 3 rebounds, 5.7 assists, 0.9 steals, 41-87, 35% from 3. Not a lot to complain about with those numbers. He's still a solid player. He's not a top 10 player. He's not a top 10 point guard. But if you accept him for what he is and get past the fact that he had those issues in Brooklyn, Darren Williams is still that decent late round guy. Now, where he signs remains to be seen. He can still be a starter. Probably not a guy who logs 35 minutes, but probably, you know, a 31-minute guy, a 30-minute guy with a backup who's capable. But he's definitely not done at all. The on-off numbers, he was a negative 0.9, so almost even the team was with or without him on the court. And we look at his advanced numbers. They weren't overly spectacular. He actually finished with a negative 0.1 box score plus minus, mainly because of his defense, which wasn't ideal, and we know that about Darren. And he finished fifth on the team in win shares, with not a great win shares per 48, but still a pretty decent season from him. A true shooting of 53 is not ideal, but hey, I thought he was still pretty impressive, and he did tail off towards the end, but played through some issues with that sports hernia, and that cost him some, or cost the Mavs, I think, in the playoffs too, and cost him some games towards the end of the season. And overall, you'd have to say, as a Darren Williams owner, you would have graded it as a success based on expectations, or the expectations that some people had of him. Chandler Parsons, what a horrible, horrible season for him it was, coming back off that, let's not call it microfracture surgery. He came back and he seemed like he was on a minutes restriction forever. Basically, he was just, when's he coming? When's he coming? When's he coming? He ended up playing 61 games at just under 30 minutes a game and averaged 13.7 points. He averaged 1.7 triples, 4.5 rebounds, almost 3 assists, 0.8 steals, shot 49 and 68. They're pretty impressive numbers. but the rankings don't look great. You know, 80th for 9-cat, 89th for 8-cat leagues, but, and this is the important thing, post All-Star break, he did have an improvement. Now, he didn't play a huge amount of games after the All-Star break, so if we have a look, and actually I should probably check exactly how many he played post All-Star break. He played, you know, a month. Well, his last game was the 18th of March, so he played a month after the All-Star break. In 9-cat leagues, he was the 20th ranked player. In 8-cat leagues, he was the 23rd ranked player. And I think a lot of people forget just how good he was. When he was in full health, he was putting up numbers. He was scoring 20 a game. He was getting used 5 to 6 assists a game. He was hitting multiple threes. He was getting steals. He was playing like the player who was on $16 million and playing like the best player on this team. But then he goes out with another knee issue. And the injury concerns are obviously still there. Now, it's not the same knee issue. This was a torn meniscus as opposed to that microfracture issue that he had, but it does put some concern with him. Now, he is going to get a very big contract into next season. And if he is healthy, which is an if at this point, he is a very adept fantasy player because he can do so many things. He hits threes, he gets assists from the wing, he scores, he rebounds, he steals. He can be the number one player on a like we saw in Dallas, on a top seven team. That's what he can be. He actually saw a dip in his numbers, obviously because he was playing so in a few minutes. But the important thing to know with Parsons as well is something which does go unnoticed, is he's a bad free throw shooter. Now, he's not a punt free throw shooter. He's not that bad, but he's not a plus from that area. But good field goal percentage, good three-point percentage, you know, good, really good assist numbers. And instead, his last few games at the end of the season, he averaged over 4 assists after that post-All-Star break period, over 4 assists per game, over a steal and a half a game, and 2 triples a game. So big numbers from Parsons. With the injury concern, he's going to be dropped down. With his uncertainty as to where he plays, he'll be dropped down. But he is a top 50 player. Everything healthy, he is a top 50 player. You won't have to spend a top 50 pick on him. You won't have to give up a top 50 asset to get him. You can get him for, you know, I think, a pretty cheap number if people are concerned. So I'd be exploring trades for Chandler Parsons and seeing how, and it's not a bargain if you get a player who's a guy that's ranked 60th for him. It's not a bargain. You need to get a guy that's ranked 100th. Then you go, you know what? I've absorbed some risk with Parsons' knees, but if it pays off, it's going to pay off in a big way for the next 3 seasons when I should be able to get a top 40 player on my hands for that time. And really, you know, there's not, when you have small forwards, there's a few elite ones, there's a few good ones, and there's a lot of bullshit in the middle. And he fits into that, in that sort of bullshitty middle bit, but he's probably the standout player as a small forward there, behind, say, a Gordy Haywood, but not far behind. You've obviously got LeBron, you've got KD, you've got Kawhi at the top. And then he's in that middle, but often goes unnoticed. And I think a lot of people will have forgotten just how good he was in that month that he played post-All-Star break. So use that to your advantage and try and see if you can acquire Chandler Parsons. If we look at his on-off numbers, they weren't spectacular, but they were okay. 1.2 points per 100 possessions better with him on the court. His win share numbers, he actually finished third on the team and played, you know, he played the least minutes out of anyone in the top five, only 17.99 in his 61 games. He had a pretty good box score plus minus. He was second on the team in that, and the first player on the team in that was David Lee, which we'll talk about later, who put up some just ridiculous advanced stats numbers. And a really, 59% true shooting percentage. So Parsons, I think, had a very underrated good season, and it is going to be interesting to see whether he comes back to Dallas or not. Wes Matthews. A lot of respect for Wes Matthews. He turned up. That's the number one thing. He came back from that torn Achilles, and he played from opening night. That's almost the best thing you can say about Wes. He played every game for the season. He missed a couple of games, not many though. He played 34 minutes a game, 12.6 points, 2.5 triples a game, 3 rebounds, 1.9 assists, a steal, but he shot 38% from the field. He shot just 36% from 3 and 86% from the line. His rankings dropped from 39th last season to 102nd for 9-cat leagues. 8-cat, we saw a similar dip from 51 down to 120. His shot was just completely off, and there was big stretches of the season where it was really tough to own Wes Matthews. Now, 2 seasons removed from his Achilles, does he return to the Wes Matthews we saw in Portland, where he was a consistent top 70 player? I don't know that we do. In recovering from an Achilles, it takes time, but sometimes you never fully recover. And that is the concern. Will he get his field goal percentage back from 44%, which is what it was for his last 3 years in Portland, back up from 38% this season? That remains to be seen. He shot 39 or 40% from three in his last three seasons in Portland, 36 this year. He's not a guy that relies tremendously on his athleticism, but he is a quite good defender, and that took away some of what he was able to do. But still, he was the second player on this team in terms of on-off numbers at a 6.4, just behind Dirk's 7.9. So he was key in those sort of areas. His win share numbers were pretty good. He finished at 3.7 there. Average, above average offense, below average defense numbers, still pretty impressive and still really important, but his fantasy relevance dropped down. I don't ever see him returning to become a top 50 player, but I do think that he can improve on a ranking of just outside the top 100. I think that you can find him maybe in the 90s, but I wouldn't be getting too excited about him. One of his big key features was he was hitting he could have hit 3.5 triples a game at high percentage, and it just didn't happen last season because everything else for him is a little bit... And it's a little bit just blah, a little bit bland. Zaza. I don't think many people expected Zaza to put up the sort of start to the season that he did. I was very excited about Zaza in drafts. I grabbed him in a lot of 11th and 12th rounds because we knew that Dallas didn't have any centers and it was going to have to be Zaza. And he is a very accomplished player. He puts up numbers. His ranking was 127th. He was 87th pre-All-Star, and that's in 9 cat leagues. But after the All-Star break, just... crumpled. He was the 223rd ranked player after the All-Star break in 9 cat leagues. He still posted an on-off of 0.9, but Carlisle just lost complete faith in him. You know, we're resting him, we're cutting his minutes, and then he just wouldn't play him. And it was extraordinarily frustrating as a fantasy fan to see what, or as a basketball fan, to see what had happened to Zaza. He ended up the season playing 26 minutes at 8.5 points, 9.2 rebounds, 0.8 steals, 46 and 78 is percentages, but just a significant drop off. And I'm not sure that it really hurts him in terms of free agency. Someone will sign him, but will he find himself in a better situation than what he did to start off the season in Dallas? I would be skeptical about that. I don't think he ever just goes in and goes, right, I'm the starting center and I'm playing 29 to 30 minutes a night. I don't really see that being what any team that signs. Look, maybe Dallas re-signs him and says, okay, well, we're going to get you back as a starting center and play you 28 minutes a night. And then he's a decent late-round pick. But at his age, at the way that he declined or dropped off over the second half of the season, which is part him, part Carlisle, no doubt, but I'm not sure he gets into a better situation than what we saw. Now, he was second on this team in win shares, marginally behind Dirk at 6. In terms of win shares per 48, he was right up the top as well, finished 5th. In that one with a pretty decent number of 0.145. Box score plus minus, again, a positive, a 1.4, a positive VORP, an above average PER. Really good numbers that he put up and really marred, I think, his season by the way that he finished it off. But he's an interesting player to me and someone that it's going to be interesting to see where he ends up next season. Ray Felton. Felton was garbage last season. And the best way you can look at that is by looking at his fantasy rankings. 383rd last season in 9 cat leagues. This year, 193rd. Now, 193 is not superb, but it's a lot better than 383. He was that bad that even when the Mavericks had no... Yes, he did start a playoff game for them last year. But when the Mavericks... He had to serve that suspension to start the season because of that gun issue when he was in New York. Had to serve that suspension. Carlisle, he had an ankle injury. At the start, but you know, NBA rules are that a guy can't serve his suspension until he's healthy. Felton was healthy, and Carlisle wouldn't make him active so he could start serving his suspension because he just like had no need for him. This season, Felton put up crazy numbers in comparison. He played 9.7 minutes last season. This year, 27.8. He averaged almost 10 points a game and hit 0.8 threes. He gave you 3.5 rebounds and 3.5 assists. 0.9 steals and went 41 and 83. Just improvement right across the board. Yes, he's a horrible three-point shooter and shot below 30% for the second consecutive season, but he filled a key role in this team. And at the age that he is, over 30, as a backup point guard, shooting guard, he played more shooting guard than point guard during the season. That's just a guess, actually. I probably should look that up before I start spouting that off as fact. I'll do that whilst I'm talking. Where's Ray Felton's name? But he should get himself another job in the NBA, because if he had been a free agent coming off the end of last season, who would have signed him? Because he could not get any playing time with the Mavericks whatsoever. I'm just trying to look up his positional details. Where are we? Ray Felton. I was wrong. He played 69% as a point guard and 31% as a shooting guard last season. But still a fair chunk at that 1 and 2. And he's a guy that you're probably not going to play 27 minutes a game next season, or 28 as he did this year, but maybe a 24-minute guy. Maybe he does come back to Dallas and fulfill the same role on this team and be that guy for deeper leagues. But we know that he's old. We know that his game's not going to get better from here. And at this point, he'll be useful in deep leagues, but for maybe a couple more seasons. In terms of his advanced numbers, they were okay-ish, I guess is the best way to say it. Not spectacular. Win shares on this team, he finished 8th. His box score plus minus was a negative, but only a negative 0.9, so not terrible. Had an above average VORP and a below average PER, so it's a decent numbers, a negative 1 on-off numbers. JJ Barea was a player who is appeared lost almost everywhere he's played apart from Dallas. And whenever he gets an opportunity, whenever Darren Williams sits and JJ Barea is the starter, he's almost a must-play DFS option. He's a must-add guy in standard leagues, and he was putting up just some of the games that JJ Barea had. You couldn't have believed some of the performances that he was putting up. I couldn't believe him. I couldn't believe some of the numbers that JJ Barea was putting up. Now, he averaged just 23 minutes a game, but 10.7 points, 1.3 triples in 23 minutes are not bad. 2 rebounds, 4.1 assists on 44 and 78%. So they're really good numbers, obviously, for the limited minutes. He finished 214th in 9-cat leagues and 193rd in 8-cat leagues. Had a very strong second half to the season, you know, being a must-own player for that stretch while Darren Williams was out. But with the Mavericks having so many unknowns of what they're going to do, What do you make of Barea? He's going to be that guy that, you know, fills the role as a primary backup point guard, and when Williams or whoever the other starter isn't there, then he becomes someone you use in DFS or standard leagues. But apart from that, he's just going to fill that role around that 220 to 250 mark, I would say, is probably more of an accurate estimation. That's an interesting word. Accurate estimation of where he finishes. He had a stretch at the start, end of March, start of April. Well, I'm just going to go through these game logs that he had. 14-2-5, 21-3-6, 14-3-3, 18-1-11, 26-5-7, 29-3-3, 21-3-6, 27-5-8. He had 5 games in a row where he hit 3-4-2-3-4 three-pointers, dishing out assists, getting steals, shooting over 50% for 7 straight games, just putting up numbers completely out of nowhere, it felt like. And again, I wouldn't be expecting that sort of performance from him again, but if he's in a position where, you know what, they're going to have to play JJ Barea 30 minutes, then he's going to have relevance. But I can't see the Mavericks going into next season going, yeah, you know what, Barea's our man. He's going to be our starting point guard. He fits perfectly in that backup point role. And when he gets the opportunity, the numbers come. And for a guy to average 4 assists per game is really handy for your deeper leagues as well. It's not hard. It's not what is hard. It's very hard to get 4 assists from anyone. So if he is around and you're looking for those assist numbers, not a bad guy to target, because we know how much Carlisle loves him and we know how much he thrives in this Dallas system. In terms of his on-off numbers, not great, negative 2.6 and nothing too spectacular there. Let's talk Dave Lee. Now, I talked about Lee a lot during the season and I wasn't impressed at all. He had that ridiculous run where it was just after he got just after he signed in Dallas, which was just after the All-Star break, obviously, where he was putting up just insane numbers, like shooting out of his ass. He was blocking shots, which he never did. I can't remember the stat, but I mentioned it on a podcast. He'd blocked more shots in like 5 games than he had over his past 120 or something like that. He was getting steals. He was doing everything because he decided, you know what, I'm going to get waived. Maybe I should get in shape. Cool. Maybe you should have done that before the season, Dave. Idiot. Anyway, he put up some really great numbers. 121st post All-Star. That's superb. 145th in 8-cat leagues. Great. He ended the season averaging 7.7 points and 5.5 rebounds, shooting 54 and 76%. But, and I'll say this again, I've said it plenty of times, David Lee is not a starting point power forward in this league. He's not. A lot of people believed it in him heading to Boston. I was very much anti-David Lee heading to Boston until I got hoodwinked by Brad Stevens in the preseason, who just started playing Lee as a starter and playing him 30 minutes a night. Eventually, Boston found out that he is terrible and cut him completely out of the rotation, as they should have done from the start of the season. But they didn't, and you know, they gave people a thought, hey, we've got to draft David Lee with those last couple of rounds and see how it pans out. He's really bad. his on-off numbers are negative 3.2. So poor in his time there. But his other advanced numbers in his time in Dallas are through the roof. Through the roof. He led the team in win shares per 48 at a ridiculous 0.237. He led the team in box score plus minus. He led the team in PER in his 25 minutes. And obviously it's a small sample size compared to everybody else. He had a true shooting of 66%. But if, advanced stats or stats in general are stats.
Yep.
They're not lying. This is exactly what happened. But if you look at those and think, you know what, wherever Dave Lee goes, I'm getting on board. I'm trading for him. I think he's going to be he's a starter, man. He was an all-star 3 years ago. I don't care. He's really bad. And he's one of those players that when you get to look at him, and this happened in Dallas. Yeah, Lee's playing minutes. He's playing 25 minutes. Oh, you know what? He's actually pretty shit. And the minutes just kept going down and down. And one of the best examples of that was Jakar Sampson. Oh, we got Jakar Sampson in Denver. Let's play him 27 minutes. Oh, maybe 25, 24, 23, 10, 12, and drop him off completely. That's what happened with Lee. It happened in Boston. It happened in Dallas. He's not good. He's too much of a liability defensively. The defensive explosion that he showed in Dallas is completely fake. It is completely false. And we saw that after those first six or seven games that it just dropped off back to what he's done throughout his career. Yes, he grabs rebounds at a pretty high rate, but he's just not good enough to stay on the court to beat anyone who should be sniffing, let alone the top 150, probably the top 200 would be my guess. But still, if you've got him, I'd be pissing him off straight away and using those exact same arguments I use. Man, he's an all-star. Look at the numbers in Dallas. Look at his ranking post-all-star. Josh has said he was 122nd, 121st in 9-cat post-all-star. You should get on that because he won't sniff that again. Devin Harris was a real disappointment to me. He had opportunities, but he's just constantly injured. There's always something happening with his toe region. I don't know what it is, but he just really has struggled the last couple of seasons. He finished the season ranked 221st in 9-cat leagues and 226th in 8-cat leagues. Now, he's one of the reasons why the Mavericks might not be so keen or so anxious to bring Ray Felton back, because he can play a similar sort of role. He can play in different spots. He can play the one, he can play the two, but he just doesn't ever seem to be able to take on a full load. 20 minutes per game, 7.6 points, 0.8 threes, 1.8 assists, 0.9 steals, 45 and 71. Very serviceable, but you feel that that's going to be his limit. He's going to be that top 200 guy who plays 20 minutes a game and never is able to play more, whether through injury or just through poor play. And that's pretty much what we saw this season. He had one of the worst on-off numbers on the team. In fact, the only player worse than him in terms of on-off performance was Jeremy Evans, Charlie Villanueva, and JaVale McGee, and we know that they are absolute garbage at this point. Dwight Powell, he's a restricted free agent. I really, really like Dwight Powell. I think that he can put up some... Now, he's a little bit of a liability defensively, and he didn't get as big an opportunity this season as I thought he was. In fact, he was taken out of the rotation to end the season, but started off the year as a 209th-ranked player in 9-cat leagues, fell down to 350th post-All-Star. But in terms of per 36 numbers, 146th. That's not... that's not bad. What did he average? He played only 14.5 minutes a game. Less than 6 points, 4 rebounds, 0.5 steals, 0.3 blocks on 49 and 73, and shot just 12% from three. Now, I believe that Dwight Powell can be a guy that hits threes. I believe he can hit them at better than 12%. I know that much. But will he ever get a chance to do it in the NBA? He's only played two seasons. I do think that he will be a guy that I'd be throwing an offer sheet to and trying to get him to my team and seeing what he can provide, because I do believe in Dwight Powell. Now, will he be a top 150 player next season? Probably not. We'll have to wait and see where he ends up. But he would be a guy that, if Dirk misses time, I think that they should have more comfort in going with him and running with him as a starter and seeing how he works out. Again, defensively, he does have his issues. He's not ideal on that end. But he finished the season with a pretty impressive win shares number. He finished sixth on the team, ahead of Barea, ahead of Felton, ahead of Lee. Yeah, pretty okay numbers. I thought that he was impressive enough. His box score plus minus was a negative 0.3, which again, as a guy playing his second season, he was just behind Darren Williams, ahead of Felton, ahead of Barea. Not terrible. And I think there's a lot to work on. A 56% true shooting is good, and above average PER is good. And defensively, again, he does struggle slightly, although his advanced numbers look relatively impressive in that area. He's not a shot blocker, but he can be a stretch four, he can be a stretch five, and he can turn it on if he's given the opportunity. He's a guy that is a speculative player, a speculative trade asset, But I'd be looking to see if I can get him for absolutely nothing, given the way he ended the season, because I think there's a chance that he finds himself inside the top 200 next season and really starts to show up, especially in that third season, which is key for guys to develop. Salah Mejri, superb on-off number, 6.3, which was third on the team. He finished the season 286th, 261st post-All-Star. Nothing too exciting there. But he did show some really big performances, but it also showed that Rick Carlisle had no trust in him, because he'd play him and he'd play well, and then he'd go to the bench, and then he'd play 5 minutes, and he'd play 6 minutes, and he'd play 25 minutes. You couldn't rely on Mejri for anything. He averaged 3.9 points and 3.7 rebounds in his 13 minutes, 1.1 blocks and 64% shooting, which are obviously key numbers in such limited minutes. And he showed real potential as a rim protector, but as I mentioned at the start of the show, he's 29 years old. How long has he got to go? He's not a dynasty trade acquisition guy, because in 2 years' time, he'll be on his way out of the league. But with Pachulia potentially gone and no other real centres on the roster, does Mejri get a role where he plays 25 minutes a game next season? I don't think it's absolutely out of control to think that. And I reckon that in a punt situation, because he's a bad free throw shooter, you could easily see him being a player that's a top 120 player if he was given 25 to 27 minutes. You could see that. I don't think you'd be massively loving it. I don't think you'd be like, "Ooh, got to have myself some Salah Mejri." But I think that you could talk yourself into looking at him and going, "Yeah, he's a guy that I'll stream in and get some blocks, and if I'm in a 14 team league, I'll like him." But his age is a bit of a concern in terms of dynasty outlook. If we look at his advanced numbers, they were pretty impressive. He was fourth on the team in box score plus minus. He led the team in defensive box score plus minus. In terms of win shares, he was 1.3, so he's down the list there, but still relatively impressive. And his win shares per 48 was second on the team behind David Lee. But he only played 397 minutes, so a very small sample size again, much like with Lee. The top three players on this team in win shares per 48 were Lee, Mejri, and Powell. The guy that I most believe in there is Powell, but maybe part of with Powell is I want to believe, because they don't have young assets, and he's one of them. And they should be looking to retain him and should be looking to develop him, but it's just not something that the Mavericks do. They don't develop players. But I think that with him and a guy we're going to talk about soon, it might be worth it. JaVale McGee's not that player. He was a negative 8.2 on off, which was the second worst on the team. He finished the season 298th and showed a few little flashes, but overall he looked poor and just couldn't get on the court to end the season. He only played 36 games at 11 minutes, 5 points, 4 rebounds, 0.7 blocks at 57%. These are okay-ish numbers, but at this point you have to feel that McGee just doesn't have a role in this league anymore. You would think that the Mavs will guarantee his contract for one more year, but he's going to be a bit part center who plays half the games, maybe less, plays 10 minutes a pop, and maybe has one or two games where he stands out. Yes, he does have exciting tendencies, and he's a fun player to watch for good and bad reasons. But for now, in terms of fantasy value, not a fan. I am a fan of Justin Anderson. He finished the season as a guy that was, especially with Chandler Parsons out, staking his claim to be someone who I deserve to be a starter in this league. Maybe not next year, but maybe the year after. Finished the season 322nd in 9 cat leagues, but post-All-Star went to 232. And some of that's with Parsons, some of that's without Parsons. I thought he looked really, really good in stretches. He only played 60 games at 12 minutes a pop, but for a rookie on the Mavericks, you just don't see these guys playing. 4.3 points, 0.4 threes, 0.4 steals, 0.5 blocks, and I think that's probably key. The half a steal, half a block, half a three in 12 minutes. That has got triple one written all over it. He shot 43 and 77% and only 27 from three. We could see him being a 46, 36, 80% shooter, I think. I reckon he has got tremendous, tremendous upside. I'm really, really excited about him. I can't stress that enough. He is a player that I'd be targeting to get in dynasty leagues. I think that by maybe not next season, maybe the year after, he's a top 100 player. I really like him. Going back to the player comps, which I've referenced on the last couple of shows, there's always names. You have good and bad names. Sometimes you have all bad names, and that's never a good sign. But in his top few player comps, we've got Dante Green. That's not good. Yeah, James Ennis. I think James Ennis showed quite a bit for New Orleans, and not a bad comp. But then you go Craig Elo, Donyell Marshall, Aaron Aflalo, David Benoit. These are all in the top 10 of player comps. Yeah, the Elo one and Marshall, we're talking about top 50 players at points in their career who started off really slowly. Aaron Aflalo, I'm not a big Aaron Aflalo fan, as you're probably well aware, but he had some really, really good fantasy seasons. I think Anderson can, in 2 years' time, crack the top 100. Be a triple one guy. Be an efficient player. He's a guy that hit 41% of his threes in college. He can become a 37% three-point shooter, hit 47% from the field, and get over 80, and that's, you know, at peak, and be a scorer, be a rebounder, get steals, get blocks. He's really athletic. I think that he is, I don't know if underrated is the right word, because he did finish off the season pretty strong. Barely used in the playoffs, though, so maybe that soured some people on him. I would be acquiring him. He's going to have a pretty big... And if Chandler Parsons goes, it is all aboard Justin Anderson for me. I think that he would be almost... the Mavericks could bring anyone, given the flexibility they have and the way that they just, you know, bring in mid-level free agents and turn them into something. But if Carlisle decided, you know what, I really like what I saw from Anderson. He's developed. Okay, we're not going to pay $22 million for Parsons. Let's start him. Let's start Justin Anderson in his second season. He's got top 120 potential for next season, possibly top 100, and he should be a guy that in the next two seasons is a definite top 100 guy. Really, really, really keen on Big Juss. In terms of his advanced numbers, not surprisingly, they weren't great. He was a negative 2.5 on offense, but when you're a rookie and you're posting a 1.3 box score plus minus, that is really, really good. And offense will come, but if you are an above average defender from the get-go, it is a fantastic sign. That offense will come, the shots will fall, he will learn, and he will be... I am convinced... How bold do I want to get here? Justin Anderson will have at least one top 50 fantasy season. Now, that's pretty bold, and I don't know when that'll be, but I believed in Anderson last season. I could not believe what I was seeing from him in summer league. He just looked like an absolute monster out there, and he was. And you know, couldn't wait to see him get going here. I'm a huge Anderson fan, and I'm looking forward to seeing him develop. And he's only 22. Finally, someone on the team that's young. Charlie Villanueva. He shouldn't be back in the league. He was the worst player on this team in on-off numbers. He ranked 350th in 9-cat leagues. He took away some development time from Dwight Powell, in my opinion. So when Dirk would sit, we'd see Villanueva get minutes instead of Powell. He played 10 minutes a game, 5 points, 2.3 rebounds, and 0.7 threes. I don't think that we should be seeing him inside the top 350 next season. We might not see him in the league, and I think that's fair enough. He's had his time, and he is toast. Do not buy into Charlie Villanueva. Jeremy Evans is a guy that I've believed in for way too long, and I think it's probably time for me to stop believing. He had an injury that cut his season short, but played just 8 minutes a game. Really, really did struggle. He's always been a good shooter, a 54% shooter again this season, hit 71% of his free throws, but tried to stretch out to three and only hit 25% of those. Didn't do much, and it appears that we could be seeing the end of Jeremy Evans in the NBA, which is a shame to me. He's got one more year left, so he'll be around for that one more year. I don't think they're going to waive him. But he's 28 years old. He's never, despite some opportunities, never really shown out. But I don't think he's had enough opportunities. But that's just me. I'm just an unabashed fan of Jeremy Evans. I don't think that he's turning it around at this point in his career. So I'm not thinking that, well, you got to acquire Jeremy Evans because he's got a top 150 season coming up. I don't think that's happening for him. He's a depth player. He's going to be a good D-League player. I think that's probably all we can say about him at this point. All right, I'm going to take a quick break, and then we're going to be back to look at a couple of the draft players who haven't played for this team and answer your questions. I saw you. Questions from you guys. surprise regarding the Dallas Mavericks, but let's talk about one of their players that they drafted in the second round last season, the first Indian-born player in the NBA, and that is Satnam Singh, the 7'2" center from India, and he didn't play, obviously he didn't sign a contract with the Mavericks, he played for the Texas Legends in the D-League, and when I say played, I use that term very loosely. He put a jersey on 19 times, he played 7.9 minutes a game in the D-League, he averaged 1.5 points, and I'm going to say it again, in the D-League, he averaged 1.5 rebounds at 7'2" in the D-League, he averaged 0.1 blocks in the D-League. If we extrapolate his numbers to per 36, he went for a gaudy 7 and 6.7 with half a steal and half the block, shooting 43% and 50% from the free throw line. It couldn't have been as horrible as what Satnam Singh was. Now, yes, big men take time to develop, but I am not excited about Singh whatsoever. This is not good numbers. His advanced numbers from the D-League were absolutely putrid. He had a PER of 2.5. Yes, 2.5. He had a box score plus minus of negative 8.1. He had negative win shares in the D-League. I can't stress that enough. This guy is bad. If he's going to develop, he might develop into a guy that plays 10 minutes a game in 30 games in the NBA. But despite the hype of him coming over from India and a lot of name recognition, he was just pure awfulness. So I don't think there's much to really get excited about with young Satnam. Let's go to your questions. Joseph Diffenbach, serial question asker on Facebook, says, when will the youth movement start for this team? When Dirk retires? I think that's the only time they're going to do it. As I said, they can't really do it this season. One draft pick and two players under the age of 25, maybe less if Powell happens to leave. Charles Daniel, says, is it time to hit the reset button? Yes, but they won't. So it's all going to come down to what happens when Dirk leaves. They're not resetting anything while Dirk is here. They're just pushing for the playoffs, pushing for a sixth seed, hopefully to get further, but it seems unrealistic at this point. Irv Dizzle says, Justin Anderson and Dwight Powell, what am I looking at next season? Well, I think I've covered that. I think Anderson is probably 2 years away. Powell is probably further away, but Anderson is a real sleeper to me and someone that I'm interested in is extraordinarily highly in dynasty leagues. And that's it. Not many questions for the Dallas Mavericks, but that's fine. You guys can always submit the questions on Facebook or on Twitter. And stay tuned. Tomorrow, the next podcast you're going to hear is not going to be a season interview. It is going to be an NBA draft preview with Sam Vecenie of CBS Sports. So make sure you're staying tuned for that. We're going to be covering all the draft prospects from his well-learned point of view. We'll cover off everyone that's going to get picked in the NBA draft. Not a huge fantasy focus on it, but I don't think that really matters at this point. I'm still working out fantasy projections for a lot of these guys, but talking to Sam about how he sees players and how he sees their transition, I think is extraordinarily helpful for fantasy owners without me just going through fantasy stats of these players. So I think it's going to be a pretty interesting crossover type of show, and I'm really excited to talk to Sam, so make sure you check that out. Follow me on Twitter at @redrock_bball and on Facebook at facebook.com/redrockbasketball, and of course, you guys know about Basketball Monster and Fantrax is the best place to host your league. Email address is redrockfantasybasketball@gmail.com. If you want in the Red Rock 30 Team Dynasty League, check out the start of the Houston Rockets Season Interview podcast for all the details on that league. But send me an email telling me why you should be included in this league, and then we'll make the decision over the coming week or so once I sift through all the applications. All right, guys, we are done here. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. Oi, I hate when I push that wrong button. Let's try that again. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.